The following interviews and commentaries are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
It's time again for Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio with the latest news and conversation related to firearms and your Second Amendment rights. Sponsored by Rogers Auto Repair, Arctic RV, Auto Trim Design, and Frontier Outfitters. And now, Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Welcome, listeners. This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in throughout the hour to join us, 458-8255-458-TALK. What's on your mind about firearms today? It is another great day in Fairbanks. More snow expected, a couple of inches, and the temperature is minus 15 this morning. How did that happen? I hope all of you enjoyed the warm weather this last weekend. I was teaching all weekend, so I didn't get out. Here at the KFAR broadcasting station, Melissa is expertly running the board for us. Thank you, Melissa. And she's keeping the Shooter's Corner archives up to date for us. So if you miss a program, it'll be available in the archives within a day or so. So what's on our agenda for today? For history and to continue our book review of shotguns and stagecoaches, I'll finish up from last week and start on the story of one of Wells Fargo's pioneer express messengers, Pillsbury Chips Hodgkins, and I'll only talk briefly today about his gun type, the pepper box. Then next week, I'll talk about the pepper box guns in more depth. I have a short piece about youth in the rifle and pistol marksmanship program that I run with Landon Hawk, Don Logan, and Mike Silva. That discussion includes a side trip to safer reactive targets and one of my darlings that I didn't kill, per writer Stephen King's advice, knowledge from the book, The Daily Stoic. And then a brief note about the National Shooting Sports Foundation SHOT Show. I also want to cover gun safety, the three or four rules, safety rules, and beyond. And I have a commentary about a write-up on an incident in NRA Magazine's Armed Citizens section. And the armed citizens in that story ended up safe, but they were lucky. They did some things they should not have done. So let's see how much we can get to today. Now, 2 weeks ago, January 13, I said I'd like to relate stories from a book, Shotguns and Stagecoaches, The Brave Men Who Rode for Wells Fargo in the Wild West. And if the book points out what guns they used, we can talk about those guns too. So on January 13, I laid the groundwork from the book, talking about specifics of Wells Fargo's history, terminology, what treasure boxes or green strong boxes were, what shotgun messengers, agents, and express shipments were, just basic terminology. Today, I'll finish up that discussion and talk about Wells Fargo's first messenger, who they call Wells Fargo's pioneer messenger, Pillsbury Chips Hodgkins. And Hodgkins rode during the first Wells Fargo era, and that was the Gold Rush era. This was before Wells Fargo entered the stagecoach robbery era, and after that, the train robbery era. So next week, we'll talk about the first Wells Fargo detective, and his name was Henry Johnson, who also worked in the first era, the Gold Rush era. When I left off a couple weeks ago, I was talking about the Wells Fargo shotgun messengers, and I was about to give some idea of the mental toughness and ethics of those shotgun messengers. One of the guards, the famous Jim Hume, said, quote, "In all my experience, there has never been an occasion when a regular shotgun messenger showed the white feather, no matter what the odds against him or the promise of danger might be. They are the kind of men you can depend on if you get in a fix, with the certainty that they will pull you through or stay by you to the last," unquote. And I'll talk about Jim Hume's story later in the series, but if anyone thinks that name is familiar, he did work for Wells Fargo. He was their best ever detective. And one of Hume's most famous cases was bringing Black Bart, the stagecoach robber, to justice. So usually shotgun messengers rode sitting next to the driver on the driver's left, and only occasionally did they ride inside the coach with the passengers. The coach driver was known as a whip, And the whip works the reins, or the ribbons as they call them, for 4 or 6 horse teams. And the horse setup is the same as for those of us who drove dog teams, and I did that for some years. The wheel horses are the largest and the strongest ones, closest to the coach. The swing horses were in the middle, and the leaders in front were the smallest horses. Now, horses on the driver's right side were called the off horses, and horses on his left side were called the near horses. Quote, each rein controlled one horse, and it took extraordinary skill to handle a 6-horse rig, unquote. I read the drivers did not whip their horses, but they cracked the whip in the air to make a noise. And it would be a very rare instance where a driver actually lashed his team, and that would be in an emergency, like a holdup. I found this information interesting. What we see in the movies wasn't real life on the stagecoaches. On film, we see bandits galloping after the coach in hot pursuit across a usually flat prairie or a flat trail, and we see the bandits and the shotgun messenger or guard exchanging fire while everyone is traveling at breakneck speeds. In reality, the highwaymen, those are the bad guys, used what the book says is a less dramatic and far more effective method. Quote, bandits or road agents would simply post themselves on a steep grade where the driver was forced to walk his team. While one robber stepped in front of the coach and seized the lead dogs, a second would cover the driver and give the time-honored command, throw down the box, unquote. In real life robberies, shootouts rarely occurred, and that's because most coaches did not carry armed guards. The passengers on board who had firearms, they didn't want to risk their lives by drawing their guns and starting a firefight. And, of course, a Wells Fargo shotgun messenger would be on board if the coach carried valuable shipments such as gold bullion or a payroll. And bandits were a mixed group, quote, ex-convicts, loafers, professional thieves, and luckless miners and laborers, unquote. In the late 1800s, with the railroad established throughout the West, the bad guys turned into train robbers. And they were rare at first, just a few, but increased over time, and by the 1890s were said to be reaching epidemic proportions. And here's a quote from the book. Between 1890 and 1903, there were 341 actual and attempted train robberies in the United States, which resulted in the killing of 99 persons. And just as in the stagecoach era, Wells Fargo shotgun messengers and detectives led the way fighting the new terror, unquote. And all that lays the groundwork so we can better understand the stories to come in the following weeks. We have a better mental picture of what a stagecoach or a train robbery might look like, and we know some terminology. So let's talk about Pillsbury Chips Hodgkins, well known in his time, who started out early with Wells Fargo as an express messenger on mule and then later on horse. He was called Chips because previous to trying his hand at gold mining, and which he was very unsuccessful, and then as an express messenger for Wells Fargo, at which he was highly successful, he was a carpenter. And in those days, the nickname for carpenter was Chips. Now, Chips carried a pepperbox revolver, as the multi-barrel revolvers were called, and we can talk about those next week. It was 1851 when 26-year-old Chips Hodgkins rode his mule into Jacksonville, a California gold mining camp. And he is described as the typical 49er with dark wavy hair, a full beard, a slouch felt hat, and wearing a red miner's overshirt, canvas trousers, and knee-high boots. And he possessed the same personality as other miners of the time, according to the book, quote, loud, funny, flamboyant, ever ready for a new adventure, but simultaneously kind and gentle, unquote. Now, Chip Hodgkins, like many of the miners of his time in the Motherlode, never struck it rich. And so to support himself, he traded his miner's equipment and became a Wells Fargo Express rider. He was one of the first Wells Fargo Express riders in the Far West. So let me read a paragraph from the book to set the stage. Actually, are we going to go to break now?
Let's go to break.
Let's go to break, and I'll read it on the way back.
Interior Alaska, it's Steve with Auto Trend Design, and lo and behold, winter is upon us. Never step into your cold vehicle again with a remote start from Auto Trend Design. Plus, with Drone Mobile, you can start your vehicle with your phone from almost anywhere you have cell service. Call or stop by today to schedule your remote start appointment at Auto Trend Design and take back the season. And as Ben says,
we will be here when the other guys are gone.
When you think about the blessings of this great country of ours, the list is long, yet freedom is chief among them. Freedom to live your life for you and your family. Freedom to keep and bear arms. Freedom to travel without unreasonable restriction. Arctic RV helps their customers exercise their personal freedoms on the road, exploring and camping in beautiful Alaska. Although Arctic RV is closed for the season, they will reopen Monday, April 4th. Arctic RV, rough it in style. See you this spring. When you've driven enough winters in Alaska, you learn about keeping up with your vehicle's maintenance. Let Rogers Auto Repair help. From tune-ups to winterizing, Rogers is your complete auto shop. Even engine and transmission rebuilds are done right there. They're still helping folks from the same location near the airport on Dale Road since they opened in 1967. Depend on the people with experience and a sound reputation. Family-owned and operated Rogers Auto Repair. Call 479-6665. Be their next satisfied customer. Rogers Auto Repair.
KFAR weather.
Overcast today with a chance of snow. Highs around 3 below. Southwest winds around 5 miles per hour. Snow likely tonight. Lows dip down to about 7 below. Cloudy skies expected. Cloudy tomorrow. Chance of snow. Highs around 1 below. 1 to 2 inches of snow today through tonight. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Currently is 22 degrees below zero.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Call in and let us know what's on your mind about firearms. 458-8255-458-TALK. And we're talking about the old days in the far west. Wells Fargo messengers were talking about chips, Hodgkins, and I was going to give a little description of what the people in the camps were like back in those days. So this is a paragraph from the book, quote, Jacksonville was like many towns in the gold rush, at least 98% male. Its 250 inhabitants lived in canvas tents and long log cabins clustered in a deep canyon along the Tuolumne River. They were unwashed, were heavily whiskered, and longed for female company. Men would gather by the dozens, hats doffed in admiration and respect, just to catch sight of a woman. They would pay exorbitant prices to eat a meal prepared by anyone of the opposite sex. Miners spent their days in backbreaking work, digging along the river and shoveling sand and gravel into long wood sluice boxes in an effort to separate the tiny flakes of gold. Companies of miners exhausted themselves, erecting dams and canals in efforts to change the Tuolumne River, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, river's course, so that they could mine the dry stream bed. But winter floods would inevitably wash away their labors. Far from their homes on the East Coast or in Europe, Australia, and South America, and starved for newspapers and letters from loved ones, they looked forward to the arrival of any mounted express messenger, unquote. So Chip Hopkins delivered for Wells Fargo riding his mule named Polly. And one day he rode Polly up to Jacksonville's Soul Town restaurant and hitched her to the porch. And a group of local men surrounded Chips because he carried a small fortune in his saddlebags, but it wasn't just gold. He had, quote, 2,000 troy ounces of gold nuggets weighing about 137 pounds, plus something just as valuable, the latest newspapers from the East Coast, unquote. Now, Chips and messengers like him, they were the link to the outside world for these small mining town men. And Chips, while he ate and refreshed himself at the restaurant, the camp's stagecoach hostler guarded his mule, Polly and the treasure that was in the saddlebags, and when Chips finished eating and stepped out to check on Polly and the saddlebags, two, quote, notorious ruffians, unquote, approached him. And they said hello and asked Chips where he was headed that evening. And Chips was too smart to fall for that ruse. He told the would-be robbers he was headed for Big Oak Flat, and that was a mining town atop a steep, very steep and winding path into the Sierra Nevada. And one bad guy remarked, quote, you have to climb a big hill, unquote, and Chips answered that he did. Chips mounted Polly and headed out on the trail that would eventually take him up the grade, Priest Grade, to Big Oak Flat. But as soon as Chips rounded the first bend, he drove Polly up a side ravine and hid in the brush. And a few minutes later, quote, he heard the approaching clatter of horse hooves and then voices of two men. One said, hurry on or we won't catch him before he crosses the river. And the other man answered, the odds are we'll catch him going up the hill, unquote. Going up Priest Grade to Big Oak Flat was a ruse. Chips knew the men meant to steal his gold. So as soon as the bad guys rode past Chips, as he hid in the brush, Chips drove Polly to the real destination, Sonora. And these poor hustlers rode all the way to Big Oak Flat, never crossing Chips' path. But several days later, Chips ran into them at Sonora, and the desperados were talking with a group at the bar. And Chips joined in and said, quote, when I have to any work to do, I always start in and I do the best I can, to which the hustlers answered, yes, and you know your business too, unquote. Now, Chips Hodgkins exemplified the men who worked for Wells Fargo early in its history. He started out working for an independent small private express company, but most all of those companies were later bought out by Wells Fargo. So Chips serves Wells Fargo faithfully. He worked with them for 40 years, from 1851 to 1891. He was considered to be the best known express messenger on the West Coast at that time. And during his career, he transported, quote, tens of millions of dollars in gold, first by horseback, then by stagecoach, and finally by steamship and railroad. He was so scrupulously honest that it was commonly said of him, no man in the United States ever actually handled more money than he did, but not a nickel of it ever stuck to his fingers, unquote. Chips was born February 17, 1825 in Maine, and his parents died when he was a youth. He ran away from a tyrannical elder brother at age 16. He straightened out his life after a spell of drinking and smoking and carousing. And then he became an apprentice to a Boston shipwright, but in 1848 he was swindled out of his life savings. Now Chips heard of the California gold rush, but by then he could not now afford the passage. Quote, in the spring of 1849, he found a company of gold seekers who had bought a sailing vessel and were in need of a ship's carpenter. He worked his passage around Cape Horn to the West Coast, unquote. And that is when Chips got his nickname Chips, and that's what carpenters were referred to as. And you can read the book. I highly recommend it for more details. I'm going to pick up about an incident involving Chips. In the early years of the gold rush, crime was actually somewhat rare. And as more and more miners failed to strike it rich or the work was too hard, they turned to banditry and violence. And during the 1850s, that area of the country experience, quote, the highest recorded homicide rates in American history. But given the initial low crime rates for the gold rush, Chips, during his earliest months as a messenger, did not even bother to carry a gun. But that changed one day in June of 1851, unquote. That day, Chips was delivering express on horseback from Tuttletown to Soldiers Gulf on the Tuolumne County, in the Tuolumne County, and that's according to the book. Chips spotted a Mexican stepping out of a miner's cabin and mounting a very fine horse. And the man rode slowly towards Chips, but as he passed him, he speeded up to a gallop. Chips knew highway robberies were becoming more common, and he thought that man might be a bandit. So Chips stopped, looked to the cabin, and saw it had been ransacked. And so then he rode to a group of miners and told them what he saw. and the miners returned to the cabin, and they determined that a pistol, a pocket watch, and many had been stolen. So Chip speeded to Tuttletown, but he spotted the Mexican on the road ahead of him. And when Chips got to town, he saw the Mexican on his horse in front of a Mexican store. So Chips went to a different store where he was known and tried to buy or borrow a pistol or a shotgun, but neither were available. The story continues, and I'll pick it up in the story a few days later. Chips was still unarmed, and he was carrying express bags from Sonora to Calaveras County. And crossing a river, he started up a steep grade to Carson Hill. And remember, beware of these steep grades. Chips then spotted the Mexican approaching on a mule, and he had a small boy on the saddle behind him. And Chips sensed trouble. As soon as the Mexican passed him, Chips rode to a group of nearby miners and borrowed a revolver. And a chase race ensued, with the Mexican dropping off the boy, then one bag, and then another to lighten his load. Or maybe he was thinking that Chips would stop and slow down and pick up the bags. But Chips continued to pursue the Mexican bandit. And finally, the Mexican jumped off the mule and hid in the brush. So Chips took the Mexican's mule. It had a lasso rope attached to it. He probably lassoed it with the young kid on it, and rode into Sonora late that night. And sure enough, a few days later, the real owner of the stolen mule proved it was his property. And that was the first time Chips said he carried a pistol. Quote, 2 weeks later, on July 7, 1851, Chips was in Sonora when the same Mexican was brought in on a charge of horse stealing. Sonora had a very active vigilance committee. Previously, they'd had a blacksmith prepare a brand marked HT for horse thief for marking miscreants. California at that time had no state prison, and so such branding was used for both punishment and identification. So the bandito was tried by the miners' court and found guilty and sentenced to 150 lashes and to be branded HT on his face. But he confessed to his guilt. The sentence was reduced to 100 lashes and no branding, unquote. By now, Chips had learned his lesson about traveling with a firearm for protection. There was little law enforcement in those early days of the Gold Rush, and men were responsible for protecting themselves and each other. Quote, Chips bought a multi-barrel pistol known as a pepper box revolver, which he carried with him on his route, unquote. And there's a lot more to Chip's story in the book, but let me end with one more quote from that chapter about the large, valuable shipments of gold dust specimens, gold shipped for commercial purposes on what were called steamer days. Quote, on several occasions, we well remember, it became necessary to arm and equip a special convoy extraordinary, and among them, Chips was always to be found, with a gun, a shotgun, and his pockets filled with Colt revolvers and Bowie knives, unquote. Now, Shotguns and Stagecoaches by John Busenecker is a great read, and I recommend it to all of you who like reading about this era. Briefly, let's talk about the pepper box revolvers, and next week I'll take some more time on them. Samuel Colt himself owned a three-barrel pepper box matchlock musket. Now, a pepper box revolver would have three or more barrels, each of which held a single shot. The barrels rotated. They were not like revolvers of today where we load the chambers and the cylinder rotates. And back in those days, each barrel was loaded, and the shooter rotated the barrel to align with the lock and the hammer. Some pepper boxes were single action where the shooter rotated the barrel, and others used a self-cocking system. With the self-cocking system, pressing the trigger rotated the barrel block, cocked the hammer, and fired the pepper box gun. And they're interesting guns and an important part of firearms history. One made by a Joseph Manton, an English gunsmith in the 1830s, had a retractable knife blade on a pistol with up to 18 barrels. If you can imagine that. So here's a quote from Wikipedia. In the Old West, large pepper boxes were favored by the gold prospectors of 1849 for protection against robbers, rivals, claimants, and hostile Native Americans, unquote. So more on pepper box guns next week. And if any of you that are collectors out there have one, call in and tell us about it. I just have a few seconds before we go to our half-hour break, so I don't want to start a new subject just yet. So let me just tell you that an article I read the other day, first-time gun owners totaled 5.4 million in 2021. And in February, I'll look up the NICS numbers for you. I don't think they're posted to the end of the year yet. This says almost 47% of the first-time buyers asked about firearms training, while 43% enlisted in training programs. And that's interesting. And one more, let's see, we got a break now?
About 20 seconds.
Take a look at what California's doing. San Jose City just passed the first gun law requiring annual fees liability insurance. $25 a year for the gun to the city, and you have to pay for liability insurance, which covers losses or damages resulting in any negligent or accidental use of the firearm within 6 months of acquiring the weapon. That's their word, not mine, and we'll keep an eye on that. I'm pretty sure there's going to be some lawsuits. Let's go to our half-hour break.
In a bass voice, rich and deep, crooning soft and low.
He always sings raggedy music to the cattle as he swings.
Problem Corner, Patriots Lament, The Buzz, and Health Talk. Local programs to help inform you.
Fox News, I'm Steve Rappaport. President Biden saying he'll announce a Supreme Court nominee by the end of the month to succeed retiring Justice Stephen Breyer. The 83-year-old stepping down when the court's term ends.
I have made no choice at this point. Once I select a nominee, I'll ask the Senate to move promptly on my choice.
The president intends to nominate a black woman, saying it was long overdue. He's already met personally with at least one potential contender. The economy bounced back stronger than expected in the final months of 2021.
The gross domestic product in the fourth quarter increased 6.9%. Economists were predicting an increase of 5.5%, though the reading was taken before the full impact of the Omicron variant of COVID. The number of new claims for unemployment benefits declined to 260,000 last week. That number is in line with forecasts.
Fox's Ginny Cassola. America is listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
The governors of Alaska and Texas have sued to block the U.S. Department of Defense from mandating COVID-19 vaccines for National Guard members who are under state command. The Pentagon has required COVID-19 vaccination for all service members, including the National Guard and Reserve. Attorneys for Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy and Texas Governor Greg Abbott say in the amended lawsuit dated Tuesday that when National Guard members are serving the state, the federal government has no command authority. A federal judge in Oklahoma last month ruled against that state in its lawsuit challenging vaccine mandates for Guard members. President Joe Biden has tapped Anchorage attorney S. Lane Tucker to be the next U.S. attorney for Alaska, making her the top federal official for the state. Tucker is a partner at Anchorage law firm Stoll Rives and brings with her over three decades of experience as both a prosecuting attorney and a defense attorney. Tucker was named as the new U.S. attorney for Alaska in a press release with five other nominees, giving Biden a total of 43 U.S. attorneys he's nominated since taking office just over a year ago.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
Explore winter trails you never thought possible. Stand, float, walk on snow with better traction and stability than walking down the street. Modern snowshoes are the perfection of a thousand-year-old idea. They're lightweight and versatile, easy and fun to use for all ages. If you can walk, you can snowshoe. Get the exercise you crave. Let it snow. Go explore. Start today. No lift ticket required. But first, find the right style and the right fit at Frontier Outfitters. Frontier Outfitters, for your Alaskan lifestyle.
Hi, Steve with Auto Trend Design. Be it work or play, your truck bed will take a beating. You need to protect your investment with an Arctic Spray-On Bedliner from Auto Trim Design. Our Arctic Spray-On Bedliner was developed as a commercial coating for use on the Alaska pipeline, which is exposed to our extreme Arctic conditions. Why should you or I settle for anything sub-quality? Get your Arctic Spray-On Bedliner today at Auto Trim Design. And as Ben says,
we will be here when the other guys are gone.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Call in and let us know what's on your mind about firearms. 458-8255-458. Talk, and we have a caller. You are on the line.
Hello. Remember the Alamo?
Yes.
Richard Widmark carried a 7-barreled rifle, or 6-barrel maybe, in the movie Alamo.
Oh.
James Bowie.
Wow. Yeah, okay.
There's a real gun. I can't remember the name of it, but that was a real gun.
Okay.
It was too heavy to really carry in battle.
You know, actually, I've just written that down, and when I put together the program for next week, I'll see if I can look that up and find out more about it, because I remember reading about that, and I can't remember what I read, but I will look
also,
that up.
Yeah, another movie reference is Hang 'em High. Eli Wallach is opening the movie, and he's in a gun store, and he's picking out a revolver, and he chooses between the cylinders to get a one that worked smoothly. Those things, you had to be really well-timed in order, no interchange, in other words, really.
Right.
Cylinders. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I'll look that up and talk about it next week. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Laura.
Okay. Bye. All right. Now, I'm going to change the subject here and do one of my little circular stories because I've been thinking about this week. It's several of us instructors who teach our youth rifle and pistol marksmanship program, we're talking about how to add more interesting elements to the program to keep the kids moving forward. And aside from normal rifle and pistol practice, and we're using air rifles this year, and some of the kids really miss using the 22s, but we've got them converted to air rifles. We're trying to help them hone their skills at precision shooting. And normally we hold a few fun events for them. That's easy to do with the 22s, not so easy to do with the air rifles. So last week on Shooter's Corner, Glenn Miller talked about how quickly the youth take to Shooting Still Challenge. And we want the youth in our program to develop their proper trigger techniques so they can take the perfectly aimed shot. And this means many, many weeks of practicing a slow, smooth trigger press without moving that front sight, or in their case, the peep sights. And sometimes it takes the younger kids several seasons of shooting with us to perfect their trigger skills. And we can start the youth as young as 10 years old, and they can shoot with us through senior and high school. Now, youth are youth, and it's hard to keep their attention week after week after week of slow, methodical work. So we want to be able to throw in a few fun events, and those fun events often require different methods of shooting, like being faster on the trigger and moving quickly from target to target. And this is the type of shooting that Steel Challenge is, and we know that the youth love this, and Glenn confirmed that to us last week. So some kids that come into our program have shot with the tactical practical folks like USPSA, or have shot Steel Challenge before entering our program. And some of those have never been taught a proper trigger squeeze for accurate shot at a small bullseye. Shooting steel does not require that kind of precision. So we have a hard time correcting that trigger issue if that's the case with that particular youth. Now, an adult who starts out action shooting can reason maturely and learn to slow down their process, and they are often excellent bullseye shooters too. But with the youth, that rarely happens in our experience at a young age. If they start out shooting fast with USPSA or Steel Challenge shooting, they don't seem to be able to slow down and properly hit a teeny tiny bullseye from a distance. It's just a different kind of shooting. They shoot a larger steel target, or they shoot into a scoring zone on a cardboard target just fine. And that said, we would like to add a fun day or two in our youth shooting classes. And that's what prompted the discussion among us instructors on how to do that. And we would love to add a steel challenge sort of day, but we're not allowed to shoot steel in our fish and game range. And we got to thinking, there has to be some equipment manufactured for this purpose that doesn't produce splatter that can damage the range floor or ricochet back across the safety line and injure a shooter. And that conversation happened on Monday at youth shooting. And as so often happens in my life, the next day, Tuesday, an article appeared addressing this very problem. And I wanted to share the information with you because it isn't only shooting programs that can use these reactive type targets. You might want to purchase sets to shoot with your family and friends. And it would be nice if you could do that and not have to worry about ricochets. And especially nice if you want your kids to shoot, because they will be shooting at closer distances than adults to start with, and that's how you start out training the youth. Let the kids have success right from the start. That's a principle that Joe Nava taught me for teaching the youth. The article is in the latest NRA Women's Magazine dated January 26, 2022, and it's titled, What Do Safer Than Steel Targets Sound Like? Throom, and that's spelled T-H-R-O-O-M. And I think that throom might be pronounced through-em, because, like through-em, because the bullet travels through the target and the target self-heals. Those are the self-healing targets, and probably many of you have seen these. And the article starts out, quote, everyone loves reactive targets, but when shooting at closer distances, steel targets represent a real risk of fragments and ricocheting. To address this concern, Throom has developed an exclusive weatherproof, self-healing, lightweight shoot-through polymer to craft interesting and reactive targets that allow the bullet to pass through to the backstop, making them safer than steel, unquote. And the through in shoot-through is spelled T-H-R-O-O, and of course their target is called Throom, spelled T-H-R-O-O-M, Throom. Remember to always wear eye protection, even if you're shooting at one of these polymer reactive targets. Now, the article notes that shooters can safely fire a pistol as close as 5 feet to a Throom target. One would have to set a steel target at least 25 feet or more for safe shooting to mitigate ricocheting. And even then, I personally felt small fragments ricochet back on me. We often start our kids out shooting at 15 feet, 22 caliber at 15 feet. And wouldn't it be great to teach them reactive target shooting at 15 feet and be able to do that safely? At 15 feet, the youth are pretty much guaranteed success. And when they are hooked on the process and the sport, when they have that success, you can start incrementally moving the targets out a greater distance so they're successful at each additional footage. The Throom targets are bright green, they're sort of fluorescent green, and the targets are offered in many different shapes. You can set them up so they're hanging, or as pop-ups, or flip-downs, or jump-arounds, bounce, or simply knock them down. And it all depends on the stand or hanger, and if you want pop-up or flip-up stands for them. Quote, this is from the website, the self-healing technology allows bullets to pass through the polymer, leaving behind only a pinhole. Each target can take at least 1,000 rounds before crumbling, unquote. And listeners, one of the nice things about these Throom targets is how easy they are to transport. Transporting steel is a big, tiring job if you've ever done it. Most of us do not own enough land to have a range in our backyard. We have to transport. So who wants to load steel targets into your vehicle and load them at an outdoor range, then pack them all back to the house? The Throom targets are 7 times lighter than steel targets, so storage, transport, and setup are easy. And Throom has everything you need to set up whatever array of their targets that you want. They have targets shaped as rabbits, squirrels, ducks, prairie dogs, chickens, turkey, pigs, and rams, and they have bottle shapes, tombstones, bowling pins, playing cards, and the list just goes on and on. And Throom even has targets for 3-gun competitors. They make an 8-inch round for shotgun and a 4-inch round for rifle. So for our adult shooters who would love to practice their steel target match skills at home, why not try a Throom target? Now, you'll get instant feedback, as you would with steel targets, but you'll have the peace of mind knowing you won't have to worry about ricocheting. Of course, you won't get the sound feedback. You'll just get the motion feedback. And plus, you can transport and set up your custom target array easily. I sound like a commercial. I'm not really selling these. I haven't even tried them yet. They just sound like a fantastic idea. So Google Throom Targets, Throomtargets.com, and check it out for yourself. And I do hope to buy some this summer for outdoor shooting. Now, the website notes that the targets are absolutely unaffected by extreme temperatures. And I take it to mean if you're brave enough to shoot outdoors reactive targets when it's 30 below, the targets will self-heal as advertised and not crack. The website says the targets work as advertised from 40 below zero to 120 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, the targets should not discolor or fade over time, and the company says you can shoot virtually any rifle or handgun ammunition. Here's a quote from the site. Thrum targets can be shot with any caliber rifle or handgun. It is bullet velocity that is key. Over 1,250 feet per second, shoot Thrum targets at 75 yards or farther away. Shooting closer will result in targets not reacting. Between 750 feet per second and 1,250 feet per second, and that's what we would be shooting with the 22 at the range, shoot Thrum targets from 5 yards to 75 yards away. So there we have our 15 to 50 feet. That's the length of our indoor range. Oh, we're going to go to a break. I'm just zooming along here. Okay, I will finish this up at the after the break.
Your Snowway snowplow. Snowway plows are stronger, smarter, the most reliable plow in the industry. Their wireless controls eliminate messy dash installations and provide the ultimate in-cab flexibility. Better yet, Snowway's patented down-pressure hydraulics increase your plowing efficiency by 30%. The drive-in mount system hooks up in seconds, and their structural plow warranty is the best in the business. Stop by Rogers Auto Repair, your Snowway dealer on Dale Road near the airport, or call 479-6665.
When you think about the blessings of this great country of ours, the list is long, yet freedom is chief among them. Freedom to live your life for you and your family. Freedom to keep and bear arms. Freedom to travel without unreasonable restrictions. Arctic RV helps their customers exercise their personal freedoms on the road, exploring and camping in beautiful Alaska. Although Arctic RV is closed for the season, they will reopen Monday, April 4th. Arctic RV, rough it in style. See you this spring.
Hey, Interior Alaska, it's winter, so it's dark out. Go figure. LED Moose lights literally save lives. At Auto Trim Design, our LED lighting specialists can help you find the best options and sizes for your vehicle. We carry all the lighting you'll need for a safe winter in Alaska, whether it's on your four-wheeler, snow machine, truck, or car. Don't risk your family's life in the dark. Stop by Auto Trim Design today, 2550 South Cushman, to protect yourself for tomorrow.
Weather brought to you by GCR. Cooper and Bridgestone tires for everything you tow and every car, truck, motorhome, and SUV you drive. GCR Tires and Service, the tire guys. Taming the Alaskan Road, Van Horn at Cushman.
KFAR Weather.
Overcast today with a chance of snow. Highs around 3 below. Southwest winds around 5 miles per hour. Snow likely tonight. Lows dip down to about 7 below. Cloudy skies expected. Cloudy tomorrow. Chance of snow. Highs around 1 below. 1 to 2 inches of snow today through tonight. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Currently, it's 22 degrees below zero.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in 458-8255-458-TALK and let us know what's on your mind about firearms today. So I'm glad Melissa reminded me about that break, because I was just zooming or thrumming through these target information, because it's pretty interesting to me. And just one more note, do not use the Thrum targets with pellet or BB guns, as the pellets or BBs may bounce back at you. Now, their website has a guarantee, quote, if your Thrum target doesn't provide completely splatter-free performance, unlike steel targets, we'll buy it back, no questions asked, unquote. So again, their website is ThrumTargets.com, and they have the links for the knockdown targets, the bounce back, the hanging targets. They've got dueling trees, pepper poppers, like I said, the three gun, and the brackets to build your own target stands. Now, both the brackets for building the sawhorse stands and the brackets that hold the Thrum targets upright for bounce back are also made of that same polymer material, so you don't have any metal anywhere on your setup, and you don't have to worry about ricochet. Now, I'm hoping this is a solution that we can use for our youth shooting program to add a little more excitement for the kids. And as I said, I want to purchase some this spring and work with them. I'll report back to you how I like them. But while I'm on the subject of teaching youth to shoot and trying to keep the program exciting, I wanted to share a thought with all of you. In any youth program, any sport or endeavor, there are likely kids who are extremely capable, but who just don't put in the effort to get good at what they're doing, and let alone excel at it. And the other day, I asked a student whose shots were just all over the target what happened, and he said, "I just wanted to finish quickly." And however, taking your time to shoot accurately is something we have always stress to these kids, and that youth purposely shot as quickly as he could, making a mess out of his target. And this wasn't the first time he had done that. He has had multiple excuses over time, all different, but all showing a lack of serious effort to reach a goal. And I know he can do this. I know he can shoot well if he wanted to. So lately I've been reading what I call Stoic stuff, and the Stoics came into my mind. Something I had not been interested in spending time to read in the past, but when I prepared a yet-to-be-given Shooter's Corner program, so this gets a little complicated, I prepared the program for, I believe it was the January 6th Shooter's Corner, but I was still iced and snowed in and couldn't get out of my driveway to get to the studio, and Melissa couldn't either, so we played a rerun that day. So I'll give that January 6th presentation another time. But it included a piece about James Bond Stockdale, who was a United States Navy Vice Admiral and an aviator, and he was awarded the Medal of Honor in the Vietnam War. And Stockdale's plane was shot down during the Vietnam War, and he was held a prisoner of war for over 7 years. And his story is riveting. Stockdale had studied Stoicism, and it was that philosophy that he used to survive his 7 years of torture and mistreatment as a prisoner of war. And Epictetus was one of the ancient Greek Stoics that Stockdale studied. And Stockdale wrote that when his A4 Skyhawk was shot from the air, quote, "After ejection, I had about 30 seconds to make my last statement in freedom before I landed. And so help me, I whispered to myself, 5 years down there at least, I'm leaving the world of technology and entering the world of Epictetus." It turned out to be 7 years in a Vietnamese prison, and he credited Stoicism for saving his life, unquote. And that quote stuck in my mind. And maybe it's these times of COVID that seem out of control or depressing or throw wrenches in plans. Whatever it is that prompted my interest, I remembered James Stockdale's quote about Epictetus and thought I should read the quotes from the Stoics. And I began reading Ryan Holiday's The Daily Stoic. It's 366 meditations on wisdom, perseverance, and the art of living. And it's easy to read, and Ryan Holiday interprets each Stoic passage. Very easy reading, and it's fun, and it's educational for me. And each page of this book is a date of the year, and you can start any time during the year. But I saved the book until January 1st, and I started reading a page a day. And on January 17th is titled Reboot the Real Work. And it's part of the January pages, the month of January pages, which concern clarity in our thinking. And it was a lesson from Epictetus I read on January 17th that reminded me of training our youth to shoot, and in particular that one youth that I mentioned who is clearly capable of great achievement in shooting but will not put in the effort to get there. And here's a quote from that day. Quote, "I am your teacher and you are learning in my school. My aim is to bring you to completion." And I'm going to skip a bit of Epictetus. "Your aim is to learn and diligently practice all these things. Why then don't you complete the work? What is missing? The work is quite feasible. and is the only thing in our power, unquote. So I skipped a little bit of Epictetus's quote, but you get the idea what the Stoic was getting at. Well, Ryan Holiday's comment follows what I just quoted, and that is what helped me understand that particular student, and frankly, to some degree, others in our classes. Quote, this is a quote from Ryan Holiday. Do you remember in school or early in your life being afraid to try something because you feared you might fail at it? Most teenagers choose to fool around rather than exert themselves. Half-hearted, lazy effort gives them a ready-made excuse. It doesn't matter. I wasn't even trying. And as we get older, failure is not so inconsequential anymore. And not only are you capable, the professor is asking for something very simple. Just begin the work. The rest follows, unquote. And I think that student in our youth program is afraid of failure. We know he's capable, but he won't put in the effort. He isn't the only student we have like that. And there have been others over the years, and I'm sure there's going to be more to come in the future. We start the kids out in no-fail situations, so they have, as Joe Nava taught me, early success. But somewhere along the process of progressing towards what it takes to be an accurate shooter, certain youth just stop applying themselves and they stop trying. And they make excuses for their poor shooting. And other students work with us to analyze the problems and get back to work. They put in the work to correct their shooting errors, and they go on to be excellent shooters, hunters, and competitors. So now I've got two ideas going here, so let me tie them together. The reactive targets from Thrum might be just the thing to make shooting more fun and provide instant feedback and success. This just might motivate a youth who has stopped putting in the work it takes to get good because they're afraid of failure. They're not experiencing the success they need to keep working hard. And using those Thrum reactive targets at 15 to 30 feet might allow a youth to experience an early success and keep up their enthusiasm. And it's up to us, all of us, Shooter's Corner listeners, to find ways to teach the next generations to be safe and accurate shooters. And our challenge is finding the best methods to do that, given all the different personalities of the kids that we teach. I've got a few minutes left. Let me see if I can talk fast and fit in something that caught my eye. Do any of you read in your NRA magazine the section that's in the front of the magazine called The Armed Citizen? Well, I will do a Shooter's Corner on many of those stories. I'll fill a whole Shooter's Corner with a lot of those stories one time and give some commentary. But this one today I wanted to give caution on, and if I don't get time to finish, I'll pick it up tomorrow. This one just made me just roll my eyes and shrug. A 28-year-old Augusta, Georgia man was awakened by a noise about 1:15 a.m. on Saturday. When he exited his bedroom, he came face-to-face with an intruder who was holding a water jug full of change. He chased the intruder off the premises and locked the door so he could not get back in. However, the man soon realized there was still somebody in the home. He called his mother, who lived at the home, but was at work, which prompted her to immediately drive home. And the man waited in the driveway for her, and after she arrived, armed with a gun, they entered the residence. And hearing a noise, they proceeded upstairs, where they encountered a man standing near the window in his mother's bedroom. And the woman fired at the man, causing him to jump off the second floor window and jump over the fence, the backyard fence. Deputies discovered a white cap, part of a white bloodstained jacket, but no intruder, and the incident is still under investigation, unquote. Well, first, an assailant with a water jug full of change, I guess to knock the homeowner or resident out. That's innovative. I haven't heard of that before. And I'm not sure how the person in the home chased the intruder out, but it's good that he locked the door. However, listeners, he needed to have set up a safe room. If there's one intruder, you should assume there could be an accomplice. Always assume that. And don't start wandering through your house thinking all is well. Next, after realizing a second intruder was in the house, the person whose home it was called his mother. I don't know if he was inside or outside when he made that call, but did he ever call the police? At what point did he call the police? I would call the police or the troopers before I called my mother. And remember to call 911 and never hang up the phone. What you say will be used as evidence. Plus, that phone connection is your lifeline to the authorities if things go bad quickly. And once outside, folks, stay outside. Don't go back in the house until the authorities clear your house. You may think you're capable of clearing your house, but let the authorities do it. They're trained. They're highly trained for doing that. You should not do that. It's craziness entering back into the house, this time with his mother armed, to either clear the house or confront the second intruder. And so both the mother and the son put themselves in great danger by doing that. There was no need to stay outside, out of sight, until the authorities come. So all of you stay safe, and I will talk to you again next week.
This has been Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio. Brought to you by Rogers Auto Repair, Arctic RV, Auto Trim Design, and Frontier Outfitters. To listen back to this or past episodes of Shooter's Corner, go to KFARradio.com and click on the archives page. For more Shooter's Corner on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.